Days, if we haven't proved in the last two or three days how much you can put into 24 hours, I don't know how to do it. Be able to have the number of people present that we've had in our services already and to have a packed house this evening is encouraging. I think events that happen like this weekend emphasize to us the relationship that the church and the school have to each other. Two distinct institutions, and yet interested in each other. One thing in particular stood out this morning at the 10 o'clock service as I sat there and thought. Yesterday afternoon, across the street, a young man had on a gold jersey with the number 44 on the back of it, out on the court playing as hard as he could play when he was out there. This morning, that same young man had on a white shirt and tie standing right here, helping serve at the Lord's table. And I think that says something about what's involved in our activities. And it says something to you students, how much we want you involved in the Lord's work as much as we can, how interested we are in you, and how thankful that we are that you are here this evening. How many of you in the audience are from Missouri? I announced last Sunday that I was going to preach this week on Missouri love. Those of you who are from Missouri know what I mean already, and I think most of us probably do. All the states have a nickname. Tennessee is the volunteer state, and I understand that Missouri is the show-me state. Might very well be if we were in Missouri and someone said something to us, we might say, show me. And I'm not for sure that Missouri is the only place that that's done or the only place that it should be done. As we continue in our study of the subject of love, and especially tonight, think about our love for God. Let's think of it in terms of show me. It was faith that James was talking about when he said in James the 2nd chapter verse 18, a man may say, thou hast faith and I have works, show me thy faith without thy works, and I will show thee my faith by my works. Being reminded in Matthew 22:37-38, 9-40, that the first commandment is to love God with all the heart, the soul, and the mind, and Luke's account adds strength, we are convinced that we would do no damage to this 18th verse of chapter 2 if we made a likeness to it at least and read it like this. A man may say, thou hast love. Show me thy works. And we would say, show me thy love by thy works. And it might very well be that if God were talking to us directly and we said, God, I love you, that he might say, show me. I doubt that there is a person in this audience tonight who would not be willing to say, I love God. I'm rather sure that each one of us loves God. At least we believe we do. Suppose tonight, and I do not believe this is going to happen, that you were to meet God or Christ in the flesh as God face to face, and you said, I love you, and he said, show me. Would you pass the test? I want you to help me preach the lesson tonight by, in a sense, preaching it to yourself. And looking at yourself as we simply look at about 7 or 8 passages of Scripture in the next few minutes. I want you to think of it in the sense of a test, and yet I don't want you to misunderstand and think that we can boil Christianity down to a list of 7 questions or a list of 7 statements. I realize that there's more involved to love than that. And yet, as we look at these passages and apply them to ourselves and ask ourselves the question, could we show God, if he were to ask us, could we prove to God that we really love him? I wonder sometimes if my love is like the love of a young man who said to his girlfriend, I want you to know that my love for you is deeper than the ocean. And higher than the mountain, and broader than the sky. And I'll be to see you Saturday night if it doesn't rain. I wonder sometimes if we don't say more than we do and really think. In 2 Thessalonians 2, verses 10 and 11, "And with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they received not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. For this cause God shall send them strong delusion, that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned who believe not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness." Based on what is said in this passage about the importance of the love of the truth, if you and I were to say to God, "I love you," might he not ask, "Do you love my truth? Do you really love the truth?" That's not to say that we know all the truth, although I'm convinced we can know the truth that we need to know from God's word. It's not to say that any of us has arrived and knows everything, because there's none of us who really does. There's something to learn for all of us. But it is to say that our attitude toward God and our attitude toward his word is that expressed in John 17, 17, "Thy word is truth." And yes, God, I love you. And if you ask me to show it, one of the reasons I can say is that I love the truth. Though sometimes I may not practice it as I should because of my human weakness, I love the Bible. I love thy word. I understand it to be thy inspired word. I believe it to be the final authority. I love that truth that God has delivered that is powerful enough to make us free. John 8, verse 32. This is almost another way of saying the same thing, but in John, the 14th chapter at verse 15, Jesus said, "If you love me, keep my commandments." And then over at verse 23 of that same chapter, Jesus answered and said unto him, "If a man love me, he will keep my words." God, I love you. Show me. If you love me, you'll keep my commandments. I have an opportunity to preach later this week, a congregation a few miles from here. I received a list of questions from them the other day that they want me to answer in connection with this speaking. And one of the questions is, do you think a Christian has to attend services on Sunday night and Wednesday night? Oh yes, God, I love you. But do you think I really have to? Do you think I really must carry out your commandments? God has given us commandments that deal with Christianity in our worship, in our becoming members of the church, in our relationships with each other relative to the home, the government, the community. And although we are not under a law that cannot be kept, such as the old law, we are under a system where God has given us commandments. And he's told us some things to do and some things not to do. You and I read his word and we understand those commandments. We understand how we are to act relative to people, relative to the subject of honesty and hard work, worship, service, benevolence. We don't do it. And then we can, in a sense, look God in the face, at least through our prayers, and say, "God, I love you." Might he not say, "Show me. If you love me, keep my commandments." And then also in the book of John, this time in the 21st chapter of the book, there is another point that you and I need to consider when we think about our love for God. You're familiar with this passage, and usually other points are being discussed when it's used, but beginning at verse 15, "Simon Peter, lovest thou me?" "Oh yes, I love you. Feed my lambs." Second time, "Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? Do you love me?" "Oh yes, Lord, you know I love you." "Prove it, Peter. Feed my sheep." Third time, "Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me?" And again he answers, and this time a little bit more emphatic, "Lord, you know I love you. Show me, Peter. Feed my sheep. Feed my lambs." We may very well have made a mistake in thinking that passage applies only to elders. There is a special sense in which elders are to feed the flock. Yes, I understand the Bible teaches that. But there is also a sense in which every last one of the disciples of Jesus Christ must be involved in feeding. Oh, not everyone in the pulpit, maybe not everyone in a classroom. It may be like with the woman at the well. It may be a Zacchaeus. It may be a small group at work with whom you can talk and have some influence. But there is that idea of feeding the sheep to show our love. Do you really love me, Peter? Oh, yes. Then show me. Be about feeding my sheep. Again to the writing of John, this time over in 1 John, first the letter of his in chapter 4, verse 20. If a man say, I love God, and hateth his brother, he is a liar. For he that loveth not his brother whom he has seen, how can he love God whom he hath not seen? I believe God gives me the right to not like some of the things my brethren do, but he never gave me the right not to love them. In fact, if I understand this passage, he's saying that I do not have the right to claim to love God if I hate any one of God's children. God, I love you. Show me. If you love me, then love that one who's made in my image, that sits on the pew or across the in the audience, or lives down the street, or is a little bit different in some ways as far as liberty and opinion is concerned. Love him. And even when he's weak, don't condone what he's doing if he's doing something that's wrong, but love him. God, I love you. Show me. If you love me, you will love those who are your brothers. And that indicates really what's said just a few verses later. If you're reading, turn back to the third chapter, verse 17. Whoso hath this world's goods, seeth his brother have need. You see, not just saying we love the brother, seeth his brother hath needs, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion, shutteth up his compassionate attitude from him. How dwelleth the love of God in him? And that question, if it were put into a direct statement, would be something like this. There's no way he can claim to love God if he's not interested in meeting the needs of his brethren. In Philippians, the first chapter, Paul talks about letting your love abound, verse 9. And he goes on especially a little later and says, approve things that are excellent, sincere, without offense. Then he says, being filled with the fruits of righteousness. Would you think I love you if I say I do and you have needs and I do nothing to meet those needs? God says, if you say you love me and you're not interested in your brethren, this is just another way of saying what's said in that judgment scene of Matthew 25. I was hungry, I was thirsty, I was naked, I was sick, I was in prison. You know the story. If you say you love me and you're not willing to get out there and do what you can to help those with whom you make contact day by day, how can you even claim that the love of God is dwelling in you? God, I love you. Maybe God is saying to us tonight, in a sense, show me. And I think you're not surprised that we stay mostly with John tonight, because John is the apostle of love. But this time we go to the 15th verse of chapter 2 in 1 John. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. Do you love God? Oh, yes, God, I love you. Then God says, show me. He goes ahead and explains this. If you say you love me and you have the love of worldly things, you are yielding to those temptations of the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eye and the pride of life, and you're following the things of the world, then you don't have the right to claim that you love me. In other words, we show our love to God by wholesome living. I think those of us that are parents realize how important this is in the family. One of the greatest things that can be done by a son or daughter to show love for dad and mother is wholesome living. The right kind of example. I love God. Maybe he's saying, show me. And then for just a moment, leaving John and going this time to the Apostle Paul in 2 Corinthians, the 8th chapter. It's rather interesting that twice in that chapter at verse 8 and verse 24, he says, prove it. Talking about giving of their means, particularly here, to help take care of the needy. And he says in verse 8 that you're doing this to prove the sincerity of your love. And in verse 24, he says, when you show this to them, notice the word, show ye to them and before the churches the proof of your love. Show me. What's he talking about? Sacrificial giving. Talking about a group of people who gave out of their poverty, where each one did even more maybe than might have been expected. They gave out of their poverty, and he said, in doing this, you prove it. You prove your love. I wonder, when God looks at you and me and sees all the things that we're able to have and the things that we're able to do, and then looks at how much we commit to him of our means and of ourselves. Verse 5 in this chapter says they first gave themselves. I wonder if sometimes we asked, or we were talking to God and we said, I love you, he might say, show me. I'm not for sure that he really understands our love. Oh, I know he understands it, but I mean in the sense of accepting it. When you and I can find the money and the time to do almost anything else and have very little of either or both, to give to God. Show me, God says. And then in 1 John, the 4th chapter, verse 18, we just keep coming back to John. There's one passage that causes me more difficulty on this subject than any of the others that I've discussed so far this evening. And that is, if we have the right kind of love for God and understand his love, that he says that there will be no fear. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casteth out fear, because fear hath torment. He that feareth is not made perfect in love. He's saying there in that verse and the surrounding verses and others that give it support, that if I really love God as I should and have the right relationship to God, I'll not be afraid. Oh, there is a type of fear, certainly respect for God. There is a type of fear where we are concerned and use common sense with those things that can hurt us in life. But he's saying that the summation of it all is such that I'm not really going to worry. I'm not really going to be overly concerned and anxious of Matthew 6:33. If I love God as I should, and understand the kind of love that he gives to me. I have to work on that one, I think, harder than any of the rest of them. I have to work on them all. But I haven't arrived, and I imagine that none of us has arrived to where we have that perfect love that casteth out all fear. And yet when we say to God, I love you, he might say, if you do, show me with your trust. Show me with your faith in the Almighty Being that he knows best and that he will do best. And to say the least, that is a goal for each one of us. God, I love you. Show me, he says, that you love my truth, that you will keep my commandments and teach them to others. If you love me in heaven, show me by loving your brother on earth and serving him. If you love me, show me by not loving the world, but rather have wholesome living. If you love me, show me by giving of your means and your time and especially of yourself. And if you love me, show me by placing your complete trust in God and in his word to be the answer to every question, the solution to every problem, and the fulfillment of every need. How do you stack up tonight if God says, show me? carry that idea on into the invitation itself as the Lord extends the invitation and we remind you of it. Emphasize, as we always do, the importance of obeying God as a penitent believer and being buried with Him in baptism for the remission of sins. Returning and asking for forgiveness when we go astray and make mistakes. When we think about that and the invitation itself, could it be that tonight God is saying to some of you relative to that, show me? If you're not a Christian, you understand the plan of salvation. I don't believe you can really say you love God and remain where you are. If you're a child of God who needs to make amends publicly or even privately later in the closet of your prayer, I don't believe you can say, I really love God and remain where you are. God says, show me. Show Him in obedience as together we stand and sing.
Blood, would you, or evil, a victory win?